Eric Holcomb stepping down. Where will the Republicans go to find a new leader? The Supreme Court rules on fines against absent Democrats. Joe Donnelly seeks to change Obamacare. And Paula Cooper gets out of prison. That plus why Tommy Sue Hilbert is suing John Menard and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending June 21, 2013.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
AT&T, connecting Hoosiers with the world for more than 130 years. Investing to build communication networks to help Indiana businesses and consumers succeed in a global economy. AT&T, rethink possible.
This week, State GOP Chairman Eric Holcomb announced he is stepping down. It's part of a large-scale transition at State GOP headquarters. The former aide to Mitch Daniels will leave the top party post on July 9th. Holcomb informed party leaders of his decision Tuesday. Governor Mike Pence is in a position to pick a new state chairman. Departing along with Holcomb are Vice Chair Sandy Huddleston and Executive Director Justin Garrett. Becky Skillman is also stepping down from her position on the National Republican Committee. How do you explain the wholesale departures at the state GOP? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Jennifer Wagner, a Democrat, Republican, Mike McDaniel, John Schwanis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Jennifer Wagner, does this look like an orderly transition?
They tell me it is. It looks to me like Governor Pence is ready to put his folks in there. I wish the best for Eric and his team, though. They've been nothing but wonderful to deal with in a partisan way. And I wish him all the success in his new position, which was announced today.
Eric Holcomb is going to be the state chief of staff for U.S. Senator Dan Coats, we just learned. And Justin Garrett's going to work for IU Health, I'm told. Becky Skillman is busy. I mean, there seem to be reasons for all of this, but it still, from a distance, looks like a purge or a departure of some kind. I mean, it doesn't look good, does it?
I understand you have to try to make a story out of this, but there's really not a big story here. This is a situation where Eric Holcomb told the governor when he asked him to stay on, he said, well, you'll want your own person in place before you gear up for re-election. And so that was part of the plan all along. And this being the one year that you don't have any election in the four-year cycles, we're halfway through that year. This is the perfect time to make this transition. So Eric agreed to stay on through the last session of the legislature. He did that, and he is leaving the party in tremendous shape. He's got a lot of money in the bank, and the party's organization's good. So, you know, his timing is what we expected. As far as Becky Skillman's concerned, she contacted me yesterday and said, look, when she got out of the lieutenant governor's office, she thought she was going to go into semi-retirement. And then she took the job as the head of Radius, which turned out to be almost, if not a full-time job, even more than full-time, more than 40 hours a week, by the way. And she also was named this week to be the head or on the board of directors of Old National Bank and told me she'd missed the last two meetings because she's so busy. So she thought that with Eric going and Sandy deciding she was going to go as vice chairman, that this was the perfect time to do it. So the timing's good, and, you know, we're going to have a good transition.
I buy all that.
I'm just trying to keep track of all the talking points here.
Yeah, that was a lot.
Even if all that's true.
Wait a minute. What do you mean, even if all that's true?
Even if all that's true, wouldn't it make sense for the governor to have somebody in place before he announced all these departures?
I would think so. I have no reason to doubt what everything Mike has said. We do have individuals who certainly are talented people who are in demand in the public policy arena. But it does make one wonder why it all unfolded this way, not necessarily because of of the operation of the state committee, which I think will be fine, and I'm sure there will be a smooth transition. But still, to have members of the state committee be as surprised, apparently, as they were, and to have them open the door to reporting and discussions such as the one we're having right now about, is there some sort of internal strife? Is there something we don't know about? Is there some, you know, what is the problem? There might have been other ways to avoid that and not surprise your own state committee and not surprise the media and not surprise Republican voters.
All that aside, it's a good opportunity for Mike Pence.
Well, that's absolutely right. And honestly, I'm surprised they didn't name somebody immediately, didn't have somebody ready to go, because Eric has said all along that he's looking at other opportunities and wanted the governor to have that opportunity to name his person. And so that's the part that really surprises me, is that they don't have people ready to step right into those seats. It is a great opportunity for Governor Pence to have a person who is loyal to him completely. I'll be curious to see who he taps for the position, because he has a lot of opportunity and could make some history here.
So what happens next? There's a faction of the Republican Party that thinks the governor should choose a woman to be the next state GOP chairman. Mike Pence, of course, will pick a replacement for Eric Holcomb, who leaves July 9th. Political consultant Jennifer Hollowell is one possibility. She's a veteran of numerous campaigns. Anne Hathaway is also a possibility. She's a former White House aide to Dan Quayle. Here's Hollowell.
There's still plenty of time for the governor to, speak up and let folks know who he'd like to see in that role.
The Democrats have lived on some of this kind of disgraceful rhetoric about war on women and all that nonsense. Send a strong signal if the governor chooses to go that way.
That's Republican Robert Vane, who has worked at state committee. Mike McDaniel, will it be a woman?
I have no idea if it'll be a woman or not. The governor got on a conference call yesterday with members of state committee, told them he's eager to get their input as to what they think would be important. He said he would make a recommendation, which is natural for a governor to do as the head of the party. And there's so much talent out there. I could name 24 people that would be qualified for this job, and especially, Anne Hathaway, Jennifer Hollowell, Mike Gentry. I could go on and on and on. And I had a list of 7 or 8 that
Mel
weren't
Raines,
even in that
about
one.
Mel
Raines, absolutely, who is now Susan Brooks's chief of staff. It just goes on and on.
And a woman, for those who may not know.
Yeah, Mel was part of the Super Bowl operation, right, and worked for the vice president before that.
But you're not on the list, huh?
No. But let me say that Eric Holcomb was probably one of the top 5 chairmen that we've had, behind me and Rex Early and Murray Clark.
Nicely done. Yeah. Robert Vane, who you heard in that soundbite, is speaking from a group of people who believe that because of what happened to Richard Murdoch, the Republicans need to send a strong message about where the party stands.
Well, I agree, but I think 2 things. One, I'd be remiss if I did not thank the only female state chair in the history of political parties in Indiana who usually occupies this seat, and I'm humbled to occupy it. I don't think, though, that picking a woman on the GOP side is going to fix your problem with women.
Yeah.
It's
the
a
problem
trust
is we're
issue.
Electing too many of them.
Now, the problem is they don't trust you, Mike. No, Mike. Now, hang on a second. President Obama outpolled Mitt Romney with women by almost 10 points.
Yeah.
There's a reason for that. It's not because Debbie Wasserman Schultz is the national chairwoman. She's done a great job. It's because Republicans
We're electing women to Congress. We're electing women to the legislature. Statewide elected official Connie Lawson was appointed. I mean, we've done such a great job of electing women in our party that, come to me when you start holding those majorities and when you start having a majority of the women in Congress.
So, question to John, is a state chair position too important to use to make a statement?
No.
What?
If I understand the question, the answer is no. That's the perfect place to make a statement. If you're going to make some kind of a statement, whatever it may be, a high-profile, responsible position that has a lot of impact for Republicans across the state is a perfect place to make that kind of a statement.
So you're saying picking a woman would be a good move?
I think picking the best person for the job, according to what the governor's criteria is the best. But picking a woman would be a good move.
Okay. Yeah, you don't want to make it look, though, that you're engaging in tokenism.
We've got to
check this box. And also, I would say, if in fact your goal, we're doing a lot of if in fact today, if in fact your goal is to...
Because Mike Pence left the door open.
Well, if you send a strong message, you probably want to put forth female candidates for office at the top of the ticket and so forth, not necessarily the state chair. Because I think if we went out on Meridian Street right now and stopped the first 100 people and asked who either of the current state chairs are, we might find one or two people who could tell you. I don't think that's really...
I agree that from a public perspective that that's important, but when you get down to the party level, which is very important for the partisans and for the activation, I think that having a woman be the head of that, and there are plenty of qualified women to do that, would say a lot, would resonate a lot.
All right. What about philosophy? I mean, I've heard from Republicans who are concerned that Mike Pence might pick a strict conservative or maybe a Tea Party type for this job.
Mike Pence is our governor. He's interested in winning. He wants to win going forward, and that's the number one concern in his mind. And, people get so tied up in all of these labels and all this stuff. It's just...
Women.
It's funny to me. Well,
women.
you're just reinforcing the very thing he just said. I mean, if you're talking about that as tokenism, you know, what he should do is exactly what John said. He should pick the best person for the job that he has available. And, quite frankly, we have capable women who could do this job, as we've stated over and over here. So, you know, I mean, it goes from Sue Ellsperman to Walorski to Brooks to, you know, we've done a good job in electing women to office.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is, should the Republicans pick a woman to be state chair? Your choices are A, yes, B, no, or C, it shouldn't matter. Last week's question was, who benefits most from the veto override? 50% said legislative leaders, 19% said Democrats, 31% said Mike Pence. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. The state Supreme Court closed the books this week on fines levied during the 2011 Democratic walkout in the Indiana House of Representatives. The fines were imposed when Democrats tried to stop right-to-work legislation by leaving the state house and going to a motel in Urbana, Illinois. Retired Representative Bill Crawford led several Democrats who argued the fines were illegal.
It was over, on average for each member, over about $3,400.
The state Supreme Court heard the case in January with an attorney for the Democrats telling justices that the House Speaker overstepped his authority when he had the money deducted from paychecks.
Our clients are entitled to it, whether they're lying on a beach in Barbados or cutting their grass at home on the weekends or in the legislature.
But the Supreme Court disagreed. The ruling says both the issuance and collection of fines as legislative discipline are functions constitutionally committed to the legislative branch.
I'm confident that the fines will remain.
House Speaker Brian Bosma believed all along that the courts were powerless in this case. In a statement, he said, "I consider this a victory for the Indiana Constitution and the proponents of limited government, and consider the matter closed." Do you regret walking out at this point?
Oh, absolutely not. I think the issues were clear.
John Schwanes, is that the last word on the walkout?
For the time being, how about that? As long as there, it settles this legal question, certainly. And as long as the Republicans have a supermajority that makes it useless, meaningless, if the Democrats were trying to stage some sort of walkout, it ceases to be a point. When it might come back up again is when, and I presume at some point, given the ebb and flow of elective politics in Indiana, there won't be a supermajority controlling both chambers of the legislature. And at that point, then there may be talk once again about walkouts. This ruling, though, doesn't surprise me, because I think if you look at the courts time and time again, whether it's been on, you know...
It was a 3-2 decision.
Well, that, right. But still, I mean, there's a real reluctance to wade in. Now, it's... We shouldn't say that they're completely distinct, because if I... you can ask the person who lobbies for the judges, but, I mean, their salaries are set, of course, by the General Assembly, so it's not... entirely separate branches of government. There's a little overlap.
Small overlap.
Overlap.
Small overlap.
Are you saying their salaries are small? Well, that's
no. But this it establishes the Speaker of the House is more powerful than he was before this decision, right?
That's absolutely true. And I'll take it a step further than what John was saying about the worm turning, if you will, because at some point in the future, the Democrats will have a majority again in the House. and they will probably put forth ideas that the Republicans find repugnant, and this will either cost them money or it will cost them a strategy that is allowed by the rules of the chamber, and you know, the shoe will be on the other foot. So it's just, it's going to be interesting to see.
It would appear that the prospects, no matter what happens to the makeup of the General Assembly or what issues come up, a long-term walkout is unlikely in the future.
I would agree with that. But I think for me, what this case means is, what this verdict means is, Republicans made it clear. They didn't like the tactics that we used to object to right to work. Instead of just having a conversation about it, they went out and punched us in the pocketbook. Well, that's kind of similar to what they do to middle-class Hoosiers all the time, but you know, that's a lot of power to say that because you exercise your right to free speech, all of a sudden, yeah, we can dock you $3,000. I don't like it.
It's kind of hard to have a conversation if they're not there to talk to. And one thing the public did understand was when you don't show up to do your job, you get punished for it. And they were punished for it. And not only because of the $3,400 that they lost as a result of this, but with the public in the next election. Overwhelmingly. And so, you know, I hope that this is so far in the future when we get to the point you're talking about, when the worm turns, that none of our guys have been around long enough to remember that this was a dumb thing to do, you know.
Well, Republicans didn't want to comment on this ruling this week. Why not?
Well, I don't understand why not. Because everybody thought going in that the courts have made a practice out of saying legislative business, you know, so forth and so on. So nobody's surprised by that.
You know, I think that it's going to be interesting to see where that does go in the future. I'm not sure that they're going to like it because it will get back on them and it won't be pretty at the time.
Hopefully I'll be 90 or so.
That raises a whole other question about redistricting reform and the effect it could have on supermajorities. Will we have supermajorities in the future? I mean, we could spend a whole show on that.
Well, you tell me when redistricting
reform's
coming up.
Last time over that.
School administrators around Indiana are concerned about the Obamacare requirement that health insurance be offered to employees who work more than 30 hours a week in the Indianapolis public schools. It could mean reduced hours for hundreds of substitute teachers and others. Indiana Congressman Luke Messer introduced a bill this week that would exempt schools from Obamacare. Indiana Senator Joe Donnelly introduced a bill that would also exempt small business owners. It would also define full-time as 40 hours a week.
When we look at this and we look at the definition of full-time employment, I think all Hoosiers and folks around the country know that full-time is 40 hours. That's pretty much what it has always been and will likely always be. And
John Ketzenberger, are these common sense moves, as the authors say they are, or are they attempts to dismantle Obamacare?
Well, there's no question that if they were enacted, it would affect the way Obamacare is administered going forward. But I think they are common sense, and especially I was with a group of school administrators and superintendents at a conference this morning, and when this issue came up, this is A1 for them. They were very happy to see that Senator Donnelly had introduced this bill along with Susan Collins, from Republican of Maine. And I think that from their perspective, you know, what they have 32-hour, 34-hour a week part-timers who work 9 months a year, this really does affect their ability to staff schools. And so it's a very practical issue.
Senator Collins called it a perverse motivation to cut people's hours. They're not going to buy insurance for these people.
Well, some companies, as a matter of fact, not many, but a few have made a virtue of providing insurance. Wall Street Journal had a piece on that this week, that a few companies are using that as a recruitment tool. Now, again, that's a very small minority. Yeah. I think far more fall into the category here, more akin to what John described when he was with the school officials. You have Joe Donnelly's position, for instance, and the bill he introduced brought a lot of rejoicing among, for instance, Association of Franchise Owners. These are, you know, the convenience stores and fast food restaurants that rely heavily on part-time help. And they're thrilled, of course.
Those people can avoid the requirement, but they're going to have to hire more people.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, Congressman Messer's got this right on schools, for schools and universities. His bill is the right thing to do. Senator Donnelly has it right on the 40-hour work week. I think both of these are good common sense proposals. But what you've got going on here is that this thing was drawn up to try to include everybody. And when they try to do that, they went farther than they had. They went as far as they thought they had to go to get the money they needed to do this. Well, as this thing comes closer to going, becoming law and being enacted, they're going to find this is just one of the many things that's going to end up costing people money, going to raise the cost of health care in this country. And when they start tweaking it back the other direction, the dollars aren't going to be there to do what they said they were going to do in the first place. So this is just the beginning of what you're going to see a lot of this going on.
So does it make sense to make changes before it takes effect?
It does. And Mike took a perfectly wonderful opportunity that was bipartisan and made it partisan. This was a good moment, I think, for the senators to come out in a divisive Washington and agree on changing something that makes sense for schools, for small businesses, and for the workers. In fact, Senator Donnelly's office, they told me they've heard overwhelmingly from people who are afraid their hours are going to get cut. And that's hundreds of dollars in families' bank accounts that they need. So it's a win-win for everybody, and I think it's a great example of how people can work together as we sit here and bicker.
But the problem is to make it all work, to get the dollars they need, this is just the beginning of what you're going to see, the problems with this law.
I just say, this may be a good move and an appropriate adjustment or tweak, but I hate to rain on everybody's parade, but people are still going to be sick and they're still going to need care somewhere. So whether
you don't dodge the cost, then we get into the whole Medicaid expansion.
Is it absorbed by the healthcare industry and hospitals delivering free care? Is it absorbed by taxpayers? It's not you don't just pass the buck.
Paula Cooper was released from prison this week. Cooper was once the youngest person on death row in Indiana, and she is now free. Cooper was recently interviewed in prison by the Times of Northwest Indiana. She said she hopes to prove herself and will accept any job available, including sweeping floors or washing dishes. Cooper was 15 in 1985 when she killed 78-year-old Bible school teacher Ruth Pelkey, stabbing her 33 times. Among those who fought for her freedom is Pelkey's grandson, Bill.
But it's to show people that people can change. And I hope that by letting know that a grandson can forgive, then other people should maybe be able to forgive too, because there's so much hate and anger out there.
Mike McDaniel, did the justice system work in this case?
She is free because the rules allow her to be free, and she met all the criteria.
It became a 60-year sentence. Good time cuts it in half. Then she got a college degree, which reduces it further. She was in 27 years.
And then the grandson and his effort to help her get out was a whole lot more forgiving than I think I could have ever been in that case. But she's out because the rules allow her to be. I hope she makes the best of this opportunity, because it's amazing that what she did, she has this opportunity.
He's a tremendous story. He says he wants to meet with her, wants to take her shopping.
Yeah, it's amazing. And I actually had the opportunity to meet her when I was a reporter. I covered her college graduation. And I believe in the redemptive process. And I really, truly believe she has turned everything around. And I wish her the best. And it's an amazing story.
People are going to be watching her closely.
Yeah. Yeah, they are. And, I'm sure she craves nothing more than the anonymity of a life to keep it going forward and going straight. So I hope that she'll get that opportunity. But, yeah, people will be keeping an eye out.
She's got a big place in history.
Oh, she certainly does. I remember the day that decision came down, filing for the now-defunct Indianapolis News afternoon deadline. The world was watching that case, and the oral arguments that had preceded it. I remember it was international news. It really was.
Finally, two big names in the business world are now battling it out in court. The wife of Carmel businessman Stephen Hilbert is suing the billionaire behind the Menards hardware stores in a 24-page lawsuit. Tommy Sue Hilbert claims John Menard threatened to ruin her financially if she did not have a sexual relationship with him. In the suit, Hilbert said she refused, and she says that's why Menard filed a lawsuit accusing the Hilberts of mismanaging more than $400 million of Menard's investments. Menard's attorney says the Hilbert claims are not true. Hilbert's attorney says Menard has a history of demeaning women. Jennifer Wagner, are the rich different from the rest of us?
Clearly they are. I think F. Scott Fitzgerald said that best. But what more could you want out of a story? You got rich people fondling each other and filing lawsuits?
Allegedly.
I love it.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. I'm so sorry. We're like on TMZ now, not on Week in Review.
I want to be back on Week in Review. I don't want to be on TMZ.
No.
No.
This is a big story, isn't it, Mike?
What? I'm not into this.
That's Indiana Weekend Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Jennifer Wagner, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanes of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
AT&T, connecting Hoosiers with the world for more than 130 years. Investing to build communication networks to help Indiana businesses and consumers succeed in a global economy. AT&T, rethink possible.